We're joined now by Brad Friedman. He is the proprietor of BradBlog.com, breaking news every day. And we always enjoy having Brad on the program. Hey, how you doing today, Brad?
How are you, PBC?
I just saw the item here that on Friday you're going to be appearing on the Ed Schultz Show.
I am indeed, with our old friend Tony Truppiano, who's going to be
guesting
on Friday.
Oh, cool. We'll have to listen, and I hope you do well there.
Thank you, sir. Look forward to it.
So item number one on our agenda today is the exchange that occurred in the House of Representatives. I called it a smackdown on Friday.
Yes.
As the Republicans laid a trap for the Democrats, saying, oh, you want to get out of Iraq? Well, here's a resolution that's really simple. It's only one sentence, and it's in English. And it says that we should get out of Iraq immediatement. And most Democrats refused to take the bait. Only three of them ended up voting for it in the end. But the debate was raucous. And, in fact, after we talked about it on the program, Brad, all of our listeners went and watched C-SPAN.
They cleared out and went to C-SPAN, huh?
I was left all alone for the last half hour or so, but it was worthwhile. You have learned now that the source of Gene Schmidt's comment has come forward, and he's embarrassed.
Well, that's what he claims to be. In a report from the Cincinnati Inquirer, they say that Danny Bupp, the fellow who Gene Schmidt claimed had that message for Murtha, that only cowards cut and run, he claims that he never said any such thing and that she got it all wrong. Now, whether he really did say anything or not is still up for grabs, because it turns out that Mr. Bupp, or Colonel Bupp, I suppose, has an interesting background himself. He and Congresswoman Schmidt have been working together for quite a few years on a bunch of, far-right wingnut activities over the years.
For example?
They've been working hard to have the, the Ten Commandments placed into schools and elsewhere. They've been very active in supporting all of those Christian right sort of activities up in in Ohio, where they are both from. Bupp is now in the state house there. So they've been pushing those things together for a long time, and she has been helping him all along the way. So apparently they're very close. And so for him now to come out and say, oh, I didn't say that, is, we will say, dubious at best.
And this man, Danny Bupp, spells his last name B-U-B-P. Apparently he used to be Bupkus, but he shortened it.
Yes.
And we ought to throw him on Wheel of Fortune so he can buy a vowel.
Sounds like a good idea, yeah. It's a strange name, and he's a strange guy.
Now, as I heard Congresswoman Schmidt utter these remarks on Friday, and she was wearing a red, white, and blue top with little stars across the breastbone there.
Very patriotic.
A lovely touch. it struck me that she was using a Fox News technique, that instead of saying directly that I think, you know, that only cowards cut and run and Marines don't, she wanted to attribute it to somebody else. The way Fox says, some people say.
That's exactly what she did do. Yes, I've received a message that I'm supposed to pass on. Now, I don't know if she did that to keep herself from having to make the claims, or if she actually understands the rules of the House, which do not allow Congress folks to attack other Congress folks in such a direct and personal manner. That would be against House rules. Now, Gene Schmidt, of course, is the newest member of the United States House of Representatives, since they had a special election just a few months back, which I might suggest is contested at best, the results of which. But that's what brought her here, and maybe she can claim, oh, I just got there. I wasn't familiar with the rules.
Yeah.
She also is having some problems with rules of the House and perhaps the law on her own website now, where she has insignia from the House of Representatives. This is on her campaign website that is also against the rules. So either she, like so many Republicans in your home state of Ohio, doesn't give a damn about the rule of law, or she doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
You decide.
And your postscript here on this item on the blog got my attention. Chicken Hawk Rush Limbaugh calls Mirtha a useful idiot.
That's right.
Questions his hawk credentials. This is Rush Limbaugh, Mr. OxyContin, never served a day in the military?
Right. Well, I think he got a deferral, didn't he, for... Well, I'll let you say what I understand that it was for.
I don't remember what it was for. So. Matt just whispered to me.
With that. I'll leave it to them. I understand the reason that he was deferred from the draft. But.
Well, it was just whispered into my headset, so I'm going to blurt it out just the way Gene Schmidt did it on Friday. The rumor is that he had a boil on his butt.
That's a very nice way to put it. That's exactly right. That's what I've heard as well. So because of that, Rush Limbaugh was just unable to serve in the military himself. However, he has no problem serving his commander-in-chief right now by attacking a 37-year veteran of the Marine Corps, combat veteran who served in both Vietnam and Korea. And that's what he did today. He, as he, you know, as he's wont to do, picked up the ball and tried to keep moving it forward. He's not apologizing for Gene Schmidt. He thinks she's great.
And it's interesting because Rush, of course, is once again the surrogate who's doing the heavy lifting here, because Cheney and Bush have reeled in their comments and moved into praise mode. Oh, John, Mirtha, great American.
Yeah.
And here's this comment from Cheney. He said, to me, energetic debate on issues facing our country is more than just a sign of a healthy political system. It's also something I enjoy. It's one of the reasons I've stayed in the business. And I believe the feeling is probably the same for most of us in public life. And I'll add, yeah, Joe Wilson feels that way. You love robust debate, and you just smeared him for fun. It wasn't because you objected to the fact that he was suggesting that the administration had misled us.
No, yeah, and as well, we should add that there was, I believe it was Scott McClellan last week, after Mirtha had made his comments originally, came out and tried, I guess, to smear him by saying that it's a shame that Mirtha has thrown in with the extremist Michael Moore wing of the party or something like that. I guess that was supposed to be a smear. But, yeah, you know, it would be funny if it wasn't such serious matters, frankly, that we're dealing with on all of these things. I long for the good old days when, you know, some unfortunate behavior by politicians was amusing. But this stuff is serious business. And, you know, for the Republicans now to come out and claim that, you know, Democrats are playing politics with the war, after those shenanigans they pulled on Friday with Mirtha is just remarkable.
Yeah.
And even now, by the way, I believe it's Sean Hannity and, someone else on Fox is also characterizing what happened last Friday as if the Democrats themselves voted against the Mirtha resolution, which right. We should point out was never allowed to come up for a vote. The Republicans put in this a hoax resolution, as you mentioned, in its place.
Yeah, it was kind of the game we used to play, you know, where you took some dog do and you wrapped it up in newspaper and you put it on somebody's doorstep and you lit it on fire and then you rang the doorbell and said, oh, there's a fire on your doorstep.
Is that what you did in Ohio, Peter?
Yeah, and that's what they did in the House on Friday.
It sure is.
We'll pick up there in just a moment. Brad Friedman, our guest. Visit his website, bradblog.com. It's one of the best bloggers out there. And we'll stay in Ohio next. We'll talk about the controversy over the book by Wasserman and Fetrakis as reviewed negatively by Mark Hertzgard in Mother Jones. That's coming up next. If you have a question or comment, join us. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast. From the North Coast, 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Attention antiquarians. The Monterey Peninsula is one of the best places in the country to go antiquing. And the two best stores on the peninsula to shop for beautiful, unique, and precious items are the Monterey Antique and Gift Center in Monterey and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove. Are you looking for a discontinued china piece to complete the wedding set you started many years ago? How about a genuine gold pocket watch with the original movement? Does authentic frontier art appeal to you? If so, you must spend a few hours browsing at the Monterey Antique and Gift Center in downtown Monterey and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove. For the finest antiques, collectibles, and jewelry, there's no place like the Monterey Antique and Gift Center, 449 Alvarado Street, and Holman's Antique Plaza at 542 Lighthouse in Pacific Grove.
Owner Nader Aga looks forward to serving you at one of his beautiful and unique shops, the Monterey Antique and Gift Center on Alvarado and Holman's Antique Plaza in Pacific Grove.
Tom Hartman.
Here we've had three huge tax cuts that have generated $4 trillion in debt that our grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to have to pay off.
The Tom Hartman Show.
So that Bush could give millionaires and billionaires tax cuts, and we have 24,000 fewer private sector jobs today than we did the day that George Bush took office.
Live every morning, 9 to noon.
Now you tell me that trickle-down economics works.
On KRXA 540.
I don't buy it.
The new Radio Free America.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic at 445. Here's Metro Diane.
We have a couple of accidents. A two-vehicle accident in Santa Cruz. Southbound 1 after Highway 17. Both vehicles have been moved into the center divide. In Monterey, northbound 1 after 218. We have a two-vehicle accident there as well. CHP en route to see if any lanes are blocked for that one. And a new report coming through for an accident in Cashville, Highway 183 at Union Street. CHP is en route for that one as well. This report is brought to you by Auto West BMW of Mountain View and Auto West BMW of Fremont. Lease your new 2006 BMW 325i from Auto West BMW on both sides of the bay, in the Fremont Auto Mall or in Mountain View on El Camino Real. Great lease rates available. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Diane. We'll check back with you about 5:15. And Casey's got your traffic every weekday morning with Stephanie Miller here on KRXA 540. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You can join us with Brad from Brad Blog on the Central Coast. Our number is 831-899-5792. And from the North Coast, toll free on 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. It's all open phones and all caller hour between 5 and 6 tonight. You can call with any viewpoint on any topic, and we will still talk with you. Brad continues with us, and the lead item on the blog at the moment is an effort to get to the bottom of some of the discussion and disputation that's going on regarding the vote count in Ohio in 2004, and it looks like we're going to have to do this again for the most recent referenda election in 2005. But in simple terms, there are two key books, Fooled Again by Mark Crispin Miller, and the book about the Ohio elections that we've referenced many times by Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis. And they have been taken to task by nominally progressive individuals. In the case of Mark Crispin Miller, a guy named Manju at Slate, the online magazine, Farhad Manju, has gone after him. And Mark Hertzgard has taken on Wasserman and Fitrakis and Mark Crispin Miller in a kind of a gang review. And, Brad, what do you see as the key points of contention here?
Well, it was interesting. I was happy to see the report in Mother Jones because I do like that magazine. As I mentioned in the article, I actually have a piece coming up in their January issue. So I was happy to see in their November-December issue that they were finally looking into many of the problems with the 2004 election. However, and they sort of used publication of Mark Crispin Miller's new book to do that. However, the reporting that Hertzgard turned in, at least, was really horrific. I mean, what he did was he went through a number of the various claims that Mark Crispin Miller and others have made about the problems that occurred in Ohio in 04. And basically what he did was he explained what the problem was, and then he went out and got comment from members of the Ohio Boards of Election, and then he said, okay, so that explains that. Gave their reason why these things happened or why they didn't matter, as if to say, well, now, see there, we have nothing to worry about. Now, the point that really bothers me in both the reporting of Hertzgard and in Manju's report is that, and this is something that I've heard from a lot of folks who ask, why isn't the media reporting on this? Is because they claim that, well, if only John Kerry would contest the election or would be out in front questioning what happened, then suddenly they would begin looking into it. And this idea is frankly offensive to me. It implies that the mainstream media should only go out and investigate and report on what it is that the politicians wish them to report about. It's absurd, and I don't care. In this case, it's a failing of the Democratic Party, really, to make the noise that they should be making about what is going on with our crumbling electoral system. But it shouldn't be up to any politician to direct a reporter to go out and investigate and report. These guys ought to be going out and getting the job done themselves, no matter whose ox is gored in the bargain. No pun intended there.
Yeah, and like you comment on the website that you've read the distillation of Mark Crispin Miller's book Fooled Again in Harper's Magazine. Likewise, I've read that and not the entire book. And I have read Hertzgard's review of the various books that were done en masse in Mother Jones. And my impression is that Hertzgard, whom I like and I've met a couple of times, he nibbled around the edges, and he found a couple of minor issues. For example, there was the one county, it's where the town of Lebanon is in south central Ohio, where they locked down the registrar of voters' office and would not permit any outside observers in there. And, Hertzgard takes that. He made a phone call to somebody there who kind of explained it away. And so that, to me, is not a central issue. It is just one of the many circumstantial factors that lead me to believe that a lot of shenanigans took place on election night 2004 in Ohio. But he, kind of the way, this just came to mind, kind of the way the CBS reporting and Dan Rather in particular were discredited over a single memo that appears to have been forged after the fact, that was used to dismiss the entire case against George W. Bush for his failure to complete his service in the Texas and Alabama National Guards, as he had agreed.
Right. Never mind that there may be some problems. Never mind the content of what's being reported. We find a problem in some of the reporting, therefore we're going to disregard all of that content. I mean, I'll be frank with you. The case you refer to in this now infamous lockdown in Warren County, the way that Hertzgard does away with it is by, he talks to one of the elections officials there who is claims to be a Democrat, and I'll tell you a word or two about that in a second. But this Board of Officials person says, well, we don't have that many reporters who actually want to witness the count, so I don't see what the big deal is here. And Hertzgard, does away with everything based on that alone. Now, the problem is that particular incident, Warren County was amongst the last counties to come in with their count that night, so the numbers that came out of Warren County could have well decided this entire affair. And secondly, when they locked down Warren County, they claimed that it was because of a terrorist attack warning right. that they received from the FBI. Problem is, FBI and Homeland Security deny giving any such warning. So, it seems rather beside the point how many witnesses or reporters may or may not have been locked out by that lockout. What's more notable is that they seem to have lied in saying that Homeland Security instructed them to lock out witnesses from the public. That's extraordinary, and Hertzgaard never bothers to go to Homeland Security or the FBI and ask them about it, nor does he seem to ask the officials in Ohio about it, you know, to find out, well, who did you talk to? Who told you to shut down? Because the previous reporters that have tried to get that information, the folks in Ohio refuse to give that information out. They won't say what name it is, who it is that they spoke to at Homeland Security. To me, that stinks to high heaven. Secondly, and very quickly, the issue of speaking to Democrats in Ohio, I believe I can't remember if you and I have talked about this before, but there are right now so few Democrats in Ohio, and the Republicans there are so filthy and have been gaming the system for so long that many of the folks on these boards of election that claim to be Democrats, and this is a big thing in Ohio, they say, oh, we couldn't have any problems because we've got bipartisan boards of elections. Many of those people claiming to be Democrats are Democrats in name only. They've never voted in a primary until just before they receive their job at the Board of Elections. So it seems very likely that many of these folks who claim to be Democrats are not Democrats at all. That system in the Buckeye State, Peter, stinks.
It sure does. You're right about the Democratic Party in Ohio. It's one of the reasons I left. The remaining members are my mother and three of her close friends.
Is she on any of the boards of election?
No, she currently does not serve.
I guess, well, perhaps because she's a real Democrat, and maybe they're not welcome on these boards.
And
it's,
Brad,
it's really amazing.
She is in Cincinnati, and the Inquirer, which you referenced earlier, which disclosed some of the information about Danny Bupp and Gene Schmidt, is a really lousy newspaper. It's amazing that they bothered to report that. And she says, my mom says, that there has been nothing in the newspaper about any questions related to the November 8, 2005 election in Ohio.
Well, I would suggest your mother cancel her Inquirer subscription and get the Toledo Blade instead, because they've actually done some decent reporting on all of this. And, in fact, on Sunday, and I covered this as well at bradblog.com, they reported on what appears to be an electoral meltdown in Lucas County over that November 8th election right now. They report that several of the busiest election electronic machines had absolutely nothing on their tape, their paper record, as they call it. I've got a photograph on the website of 14 voting machines that were left sitting in a hallway at the University of Toledo for 10 days following the election. And there are at least a dozen, apparently, different investigations going on into what the hell went wrong on election day, at least in Lucas County.
Mm-hmm.
So your mom needs to pick up the Toledo Blade, because they appear to be the only ones who really are doing any kind of real investigative reporting into the election issues in Ohio.
To her over Thanksgiving dinner. Let's come back to Mark Hertzgaard for a moment. I just want to read briefly from the final paragraphs of his article in Mother Jones. In the end, reasonable people may differ about the strength of the skeptic's case. Personally, I came away persuaded there was indeed something rotten in the state of Ohio in 2004. Whether by intent or negligence, authorities took actions that prevented many thousands of citizens from casting votes and having them counted. He goes on, yet it remains far from clear that Bush stole the election. And I say that as someone who has written that Bush did steal Florida and the White House in 2000. And he puts here, full disclosure, Hertzgaard says that he is friendly with skeptics Miller and Wasserman. First, some of the most far-reaching acts of potential disenfranchisement, such as the purging of voter rolls, were illegal. Second, even if Kerry had won Ohio, the national vote went to Bush by 3 million. Ohio would have given Kerry the presidency by the same unholy route that Bush traveled in 2000 and led so many Democrats to urge the abolishment of the Electoral College. That's not a compelling argument.
Finally, no, it certainly isn't. And notice within that argument, he says something is rotten in the state of Ohio.
Yes.
Which, you know, legal or otherwise, or stolen by Bush or by anybody else or by accident, that seems to me to be the job of the media to get in there and look. If we have a, you know, someone who is not elected, with the most votes in that particular state, then that should be reported on. I don't care if it was stolen by him, by anybody else, or if it was merely an accident. That's the sort of thing that we need to know. And, yeah, he buries that at the very end of a rather long article, which, you know, if you don't read that far, you would think that he's arguing that there is no case for a stolen election in Ohio.
Brad Friedman, thanks for joining us today. Visit Brad's blog, bradblog.com, on the World Wide Web thing. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Peter. Have a great holiday.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon. My lines are open for the rest of the program, so grab a line and let's chat. 831-899-5792, toll free, 888-579-2540. This is the Peter B. Collins Show.